America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Welcome back, everyone. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live. We are presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. We're coming to you in our late week episode. It's May 15th, Thursday. And of course, as always, brought to you by PPV.com. I know everyone out there, a lot of our listeners don't like commitment, Chris. They're not commitment free, ladies and men. And if you're commitment free, then PPV.com is the place for you this summer. We have some big fights coming up on the schedule. Tank versus Roach. August 16th is a report that is out right now. That will be on PPV.com. Fundora versus Zhu 2. That will be on PPV.com. Pacquiao, 46 years old, coming back to reclaim glory, will also be on PPV.com. No commitments. Sign up. Go fight by fight. We know you don't like commitments in the summer, especially those summer months. I'm labeling our listeners as non-committal people.
Well, cuffing season is over, Dan. You know this. I mean, you were trying to cuff all season, wasn't working out, but now you missed the boat. You got to wait till next year.
Oh boy!
So no more commitment for the rest of the year from Dan Canobio. No more.
No. This isn't about me.
There's never commitment with PPV.com, which is why so many of our listeners love it. But yeah, I mean, we have a schedule, Dan. There's a schedule in the summer. We have it. It's happened.
It is. It has happened. There's a report that Tank Roach 2 will be August 16th. It was rumored for June. I never thought June was the case. It's just too soon for a turnaround, a fight of that. It was a grueling fight. Wasn't any cuts or anything, but June was a little too quick. August 16th should be a stacked undercard. Then July 19th with Pacquiao, with Zhu, Fundora, Barrios. That should also be another stacked card as well. And we will have it all on PPV.com. We'll be out in Vegas twice, Vegas in August. Oof, it's going to be hot. The live interactive chat, me, you, Lampley, not part of it anymore. Pugmire, we'll have to get some new characters, assemble a new squad for that live interactive chat. So join us at PPV.com this summer. You thinking of some friends that you can bring over to the chat?
I am. I'm thinking about a mutual friend, you and I both, Nonito Donaire.
Oh, he'd be awesome. Could he type?
But we can get him a typer. It's fine. We can get him a typer.
He brings his kids to all the events. I work with him in Orlando a lot. It's like a resort. If I was a 10-year-old, I would love this resort. And he brings his kids, and he's teaching his kids to become like YouTubers. Like, they know everything. So I'm sure his kids could teach him how to type.
There you go.
Or Rachel can teach him how to type.
Or just have them do it. Have the kid do it. That's great. Make it a family affair.
Family affair.
Get him on the payroll.
There you go. The PPV payroll. Let's get into it. We have a lot of voicemails on this episode. It's been a while since we heard from you. Months of voicemails. Because we were supposed to do one last month and all of a sudden breaking news happens. So it's nice to see the voicemail backlog.
All of a sudden breaking news. Damn, that's how breaking news happens. All of a sudden
news breaks. I hate when the news breaks all of a sudden. And
I hate when the breaking news is breaking.
Why can't they just give me an update or give me a announcement for the announcement? Maybe I'm thinking like a true content guy, because that's the new thing for content makers is you announce an announcement. Like next week, I'm announcing something huge. I think I did that when we announced our move to PPV.com, and there were a few people out there thinking that I was going to like join Misfits Boxing or become a fighter.
We can get you and Ben Davis. I think that would be a good matchup. You two.
Ben, I love Ben Davis.
Ben Davis is great.
I forgot you worked with him.
Oh, I love Ben. Ben, I told Ben when we worked together, I was like, man, if I could buy stock in you, I would.
he's a lot of energy.
He's going places. That kid rules.
Yeah, a lot of energy for him. A lot of traveling. He does a lot of Misfit stuff. He does some dirty boxing. He does a little bit of everything. He did some Flex Fight Series for my brother. I think he replaced me on Flex Fight Series. My brother fired me. No, he didn't. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't do it anymore. And Instep Ben. What other news do we have before we get to the voicemails? Canelo Crawford is on the move. It is no longer going to be Friday, September 12th. This is according to Mike Coppinger, who was told from Turkey. I would love to know how that line of communication goes down. But apparently Turkey told Coppinger, put this out there, hey, the fight is no longer on Friday. It's on Saturday. And guess what? It's no longer on Netflix. It's on. We don't know what platform it's going to be on. And also, we don't know where it's going to be. It could be in New York. It could be in L.A. It could be in Vegas. It's not at Allegiant Stadium, like we said after the Canelo school fight. It's not in Las Vegas. It's not on a Friday, despite it being on ticket sites. I got messages from fans telling me I bought a ticket for Friday night.
Oh, no.
So what is going on here? Boxing Scene is reporting, Lance Pugmire in particular is reporting, that don't fall for this. This is just some posturing. I talked to an official and they said this is just a move. Well, I don't know what to make of all this.
What's the move? What would be the play? I don't understand.
You get more money. You scare Netflix a little bit, or yeah, that's what it would be.
A negotiating ploy against Netflix?
Yes, because Netflix had their upfront yesterday. For those who don't know what an upfront is, it's like a big fancy show on at a ballroom where all your biggest stars from every network come out and you announce your schedule. Like Netflix had an upfront yesterday and they announced their NFL upcoming schedule. They have three games on Christmas Day. They have, you know, WWE. They have their whole rollout. And Canelo Crawford was not part of that rollout. Doesn't say a lot. You just read the tea leaves a little bit. I think Chris Mannix tweeted that out. If Netflix announces that Canelo Crawford at their upfront, then obviously it's going to be on Netflix. But if you don't hear from it, man, maybe there is some truth to this report from Ring Magazine. But we have dueling reports. And when you ask the question, does this kind of – it just raises a little bit of confusion around a fight that is still 5 months away.
Well, I mean, this is nothing new, nothing to be unexpected from what we've been dealing with lately. So, you know, it is what it is. Is the fight still happening? Yes. Where it ends up, where it lands, it doesn't matter. We're going to tune in. We're going to cover it. You guys are going to know. So at the end of the day, it's just posturing. This is all the stuff that I will say this.
Say it.
In recent years, the curtain's getting pulled back more and more, and the people from the outside, the fans, the viewers, are starting to realize how the business of boxing goes down. We're starting
how hard
to
it
see
is?
Not even how hard it is, how shady it is, and how weird it is, and
how
upside
difficult
down
it is, even if you have unlimited funds.
Right, it's not easy. And listen, how many outside influences have come into our sport and failed miserably?
50 Cent, Jay-Z,
boom. I mean, you talk about moguls. These are
two of the most successful people in business.
Moguls have come into our sport and left with their tail between their legs. It's a very difficult business. I do like the fact that we're getting the curtain pulled back a little bit, that people are starting to see this, understand how difficult it is to make a big fight, how difficult it is in terms of networks and promoters and governing bodies and managers and fighters. And there's so many working, moving parts in this sport, which people are starting to get kind of wind of, which I think is a good thing. I think ultimately it's a good thing because I think there's a chance that we can clean up the sport a little bit if everybody understands that there's a lot of weird stuff going on behind the scenes.
So as of right now,
or not, or it's going to stay the way it always has been. And whatever.
No, I do. I think that, you know, the TKO group, Saudi, Turkey, they came into this game and they made a lot of big fights and we all loved it. But it's really hard. This is a hard, I'm not sitting here criticizing. This is a hard game. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. And another thing too, is if this fight happens on Saturday, September 13th, that is one of UFC's biggest events of the year. It's their Noche event. It's their all Mexican. Mm. It's in Guadalajara. And Dana White is supposed to be promoting this Canelo Crawford event. So how could Dana White be in two places at one time? So that lets speculation.
Didn't Canelo go head to head with Noche last year and beat him?
Yeah, but no. Dana White wasn't part of both. My point is,
but where was Turki Alashik that night?
I don't remember.
He was at Noche
on a plane. I don't know. The point is, there's people saying is there a rift now between Dana and Turkey? Because why would Turkey move his event? Like, Dana wouldn't move the Canelo Crawford fight to the same night of his event. He would do it on Friday, the Canelo Crawford, and he would do the UFC fight on Saturday, and he would cross promote both of them. He would talk on Friday all week long. He would talk about both. And then after Canelo Crawford's over, he would say, everybody tune in Saturday night, even though it's not the same crowd.
But the bell of the ball is Saturday night. So whoever gets Saturday, that's what the main card is.
You would think, right? Conventional wisdom.
Is Canelo going to step back and not be the main night of that weekend? I don't know about that.
Well, here's the thing. With dealing with Netflix, Tyson Paul was a Friday night. Serrano versus Taylor 3 is a Friday night. They like Friday night events.
Yeah, but neither one of those fights are anywhere near the level of Canelo and Crawford.
Oh, I think Tyson Paul is bigger.
No, in terms of the sport of boxing, absolutely.
No, in terms of what Netflix cares about, they care about viewers. They care about crashing the server.
Netflix cares about that, but
they underestimated how big Tyson Paul was going to be. But
well, obviously, yeah, but
that shit was crazy. You know, I almost had a panic attack when they were like, "Dan, you have to talk in front of this camera." There's 110 countries tuning in. And I said, "Oh, oh boy."
Oh.
Yeah, guys, have a second. You have a second. I can't talk. If you go to SeatGeek right now, it says September 13th, TBD. You can't even. There's no listings. No longer says Friday. So make of that what you will. I'm sure we'll hear more about it. There's a press conference going on right now as we speak in New York City for the July 12th card, which features Edgar Berlanga versus Shiraz, which features Shakur versus Zepeda. And how about this? They're doing it at the Arthur Ashe Tennis Center. Is that the name of it?
Yeah, that was that's a cool move.
Really cool move. I went back and I found a tweet from like 2019 where I was like, someone needs to do a fight at the Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Didn't we say that like three episodes ago?
Yeah, I've been saying it for a while now. But
no, but I mean, we made a big thing about it like literally three episodes ago. And we said, Turkey, if you're listening, do a card there.
Maybe he is listening.
We literally said this. I mean, am I get in the comments, guys. I'm pretty sure
we are, because I got, I've been saying it for a while. A few listeners and a few followers from way back were like, dude, you talked about this a long time ago. And we also talked about it a few episodes ago. It's not at the big stadium, which is where the U.S. Open, like the main court is, because that's a big-ass stadium. It's at Louis Armstrong Stadium, which is right next to it on the grounds of the tennis center in Queens in Flushing, New York. I've been there. I was there this summer. Like, you can watch some tennis matches. They had the quarterfinals and stuff, or like loser's bracket and that type of stuff. Awesome venue. Like, one of the coolest venues. Open air. And the thing is WTA, that's the Tennis Association, they never wanted anything else in that stadium. Only for 2 weeks. It's only used for 2 weeks, and it's literally like 5 minutes from my apartment right here. And it's a massive grounds, and they barely use it. But when they use it, it's for the U.S. Open, and they get millions upon millions of people coming in there in foot traffic. They only had one event there, and it was AEW wrestling like 2 years ago. Random. But random. That's going to be awesome. Awesome scene. Ring Magazine going right back into the deep end with different venues. This is a more traditional venue than Times Square, because I saw some comments like, oh, you guys are going to go right back into a venue that's not non-traditional. It's an arena. It's a tennis center, just like StubHub Center in L.A.
Yeah, that's a lot easier than just declaring that a public space is an arena, because it's not. But I like what Ring Magazine is doing in terms of doing these off the wall or out of out of context or out of the the zeitgeist of where fights happen, like the Alcatraz thing. I thought that was cool. I think it's cool. I mean, Alcatraz, like,
is that going to happen?
I don't know. I mean, Trump has been talking about reopening Alcatraz. Maybe there's a way in because of that. I'm sure there's a lot of red tape for that. Times Square.
Well, Trump is in Saudi Arabia, bro, right now.
I know. Isn't he back? Didn't he get back?
Turkey's posting pictures with all of the U.S. guys.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that. The Times Square thing, I never thought that was a good idea because it's just too many logistical. It's a nightmare. You know how New York is. But this is different. This is a good idea.
It's going to be a buzz. There's going to be, you got two New Yorkers or two tri-state guys, Shakur and Berlanga. So They're going to show out.
Shakur's been in Newark a bunch of times, all his last couple fights. So that's an easy transition to move him over there in Queens. Berlanga, he's got the New Yorkans. He's riding the coattails of a very easy knockout, but then also the Canelo fight. So yeah, I think this card's going to do really well.
And there'll be fans. There'll be an atmosphere, which Times Square was missing. I don't know if Alcatraz. I don't know what you're going to get. Literally, yeah, how do you even get there?
That's the only thing that's going to be missing from that. It's just going to be that's a cool concept.
They might scrap it. I don't know what they're going to do, but one thing I do know is they listen to feedback, and the Times Square thing wasn't the best feedback. I'm sure they got a lot of constructive criticism on how that all went down. I think you need
feedback is after the fact. People were saying the Times Square thing was a bad idea before.
I think people underestimated how quiet it was going to be in there, and I think that really affected the fighters. I would say it was up there. If there was a percentage of why the fights were so bad, I would say having no fan atmosphere was a pretty big chunk of why it was like that.
Well, I think we're starting to realize, and I think other promotions are starting to realize, which I thought they would have because of the pandemic, that the atmosphere matters. The what's going on around the ring matters. Because when it's slow out there, it ends up being slow inside oftentimes. And fighters, listen, guys, we are exhibitionists. We go in front of millions of people with our shirts off and try to knock another guy's head off. And if you don't have a crowd, you don't have that energy, it leads to different kinds of performances. So atmospheres matter. That's why Wembley Arena, even when you have fighters that aren't even that, you know, world class, put on great performances because the energy is different. So atmosphere matters, guys. Let's keep the atmosphere up.
In other news, Holly Holm is returning to boxing. She is the most recent signing of Most Valuable Promotions. MVP has cornered the market on women's boxing. They've pretty much signed everyone besides Clarissa Shields. And Holly Holm, of course, you'd know her from knocking out Ronda Rousey, first person to hand Ronda Rousey a loss in 2015. That was a brutal leg kick. I predicted it. No big deal. But people don't. Some people know, some people don't, that before she stepped into the octagon, she was a world-class three-division championship boxer. She defended her title 18 times. She was Ring Magazine Fighter of the Year in 2005 and 2006. She had a 33-2-3 record. She fought Christy Martin towards the end of Christy Martin's career.
She fought a lot of really good girls.
Yeah. This is before women's boxing. Women's boxing was still in, like, the shadows. It was not what it is now. It wasn't even what it was in like 2010. We're talking 05. Oh, we're talking, she made her debut long time, way early. Holly Holm, I think she probably made her debut around the same time Serrano did, or maybe even earlier. What's her box rec? But she's been around forever.
She might have been her boxing.
She's 43.
Around the same time as me.
Probably. You guys are not the same age, but close. She made her boxing debut in 2002.
Oh, no, even way before me.
In Albuquerque.
I was still kickboxing then.
She's a beast. She's a legend. I actually called...
Well, she's a three-sport champion. She's a world champion in kickboxing. She's a world champion in boxing and a world champion in MMA.
One better than you.
Yeah. No, she's the best. Literally, she's the best.
No,
She's the only three-sport world champion.
She's pioneer.
But, listen, there's women on her records that I know a lot of our listeners never heard of. Anne Saccarato, she beat her. Chevelle Hallback, she beat her. Belinda Lara Quente could really fight. She had a really upside down record, but she really fight. Mary Jo Saunders, another win. She beat all these girls, all of them. Chevelle Hallback again. These good women can all fight. Anne Saccarato again. There's a couple. Mary McGee, she can fight. Like recently, has been in world title fights. Like she's. She's beaten really Mia St. John, she fought, I believe, too.
Yeah.
Christy Martin and Mia St. John. She beat them both. Mia St. John and Christy Martin back-to-back fights. She can really fight. And she dominated both of them.
Yeah. And she kicked Ronda Rousey in the jaw.
Kicked her head off.
Oh my God. That was amazing. Because Ronda Rousey
She was outboxing the shit out of her before that too, though.
Yeah.
People forget that.
The Ronda Rousey hype train was
crazy.
Insanity. It was
insanity, bro.
She was looked at as, it was like, I'm going to say Tyson-esque, but it was like, they were trying to build it like that. It took over sports. She was unstoppable. She was everywhere because she was, you know, very marketable. Then here comes Holly Holm, the preacher's daughter.
The preacher's daughter.
kicked her head off.
Coal miner's daughter, which was Chrissy Martin versus the preacher's daughter. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So she signs with MVP. She's 43 years old. They're putting her in really tough Yolanda Vega, who was an undefeated Mexican fighter, 10-round lightweight contest, 135, which is an interesting aspect of this because we were texting early before the show. I've been around her too. I called a few fights with Holly Holm with MVP. She's big. She's a big girl.
Also, right off the bat, I think 135 for her fighting a boxing is a bad idea. Boxing matches are a lot longer. They're a lot faster. They start much quicker. There's not feeling out. There's not ability to hit the ground and kind of rest and recharge. The metabolic output's way higher in boxing. So the intensity levels are different. And generally, MMA fighters cut a lot more weight. They're way more aggressive on their weight cuts than boxers are because they can be. She's big for 135. I think it would have been smarter to come back at 140. But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, she's a pro. She's been doing this a long time. But 43 years old, making 135 on a boxing weight-making schedule, that worries me.
You know, I'm wondering why the signing. I think it's a big splash for MVP. You know, this is great for Holm to get a payday. It's great for MVP because we're the premier women's promotion, and we just signed arguably the best woman combat fighter of all time. So it makes sense from that standpoint. But you got to think that maybe they want to put her in with Serrano one day real soon, because Holm's 43, Serrano's 36 or 37. Serrano fights at 140 with Taylor. I know that's on her comfortable weight. So, you know, maybe they do that at 135. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And then who's the other champion? Oh, man, that you're signed to?
Chantel Cameron.
Bumgarner. She's good. She's tough. I could see a Bumgarner-Holm fight. I can 100% see that fight happening.
Chantel Cameron beat Katie Taylor.
Yeah, Chantel Cameron is really good. She's
won a lot of money that night.
She's one of the best women in the world today. She can punch.
And the second fight
technical.
Was really close. Remember how close Super the close. Second fight with Taylor was? Super. There was all that holding and clinching, and the referee was horrendous. Yeah, there's a pretty good amount of women signed to MVP.
It was a bad cut in the second one, right? That was the second one. It was a really bad
There were headbutts. There were holding. Katie Taylor did a throw two punches, hold. Throw two punches, hold. And she figured out a way to do that for 2 minutes, 10 rounds. Hometown decision. I thought she lost both fights, but whatever. Story for another day. Now let's get into the voicemails. It is great to hear from all you folks out there, and we will get it started. Oh, wait, you can't hear it?
No.
All right, play it again.
I thought we were doing a long pause.
Colorado. I was just wondering, like, what's the origin story for how y'all met? Did Dan go to, like, Chris's fights on Long Island? Is this just, like, an Italian thing? I'd love to know. Thank you.
Just some freaking Italian thing? Like, there's millions of Italians in the world. And
especially Long Island.
Some Italian thing. I don't know. I think I heard of you on the scene, like, around 2011, 2012. And then fought on ESPN a bunch. Obviously, this Long Island, there's a lot of Italians on Long Island, but there ain't a lot of world champion boxers on Long Island. So when you have a fighter that's coming around the ranks and is good, and you're from Long Island, you take notice. Like, you know, for a while, it was Gentleman Jerry Cooney. That was it. And then I'm like, who is this Algeria guy? Around the same age. I got to, you know, see what this guy's about. I think we probably met at a fight.
Yeah, I actually don't remember when we first met. But, yeah, I was making a lot of noise in late, you know, 2000-aughts to early 2010s. And I mean, every one of my fights was big then. I sold out to Paramount like 11 times in a row. But yeah, it was a big deal. We were growing and growing and growing before. And then I only fought on ESPN one time, actually. So it was that was
Taylor
the first fight. That was Taylor. It was the first fight ever brought to the first ESPN fight in the Paramount on Long Island. I think there's only one or two others after that.
Joe
NBC
Smith.
Sports came. NBC Sports came to Paramount. I fought on that. I fought the main event of the first ESPN card there. TV Azteca, first time ever there with Paramount. Yeah. I was the main event. So,
TV Azteca.
Yeah,
I remember I had three
Paramount shows that were on TV.
Wow. I do remember in the lead up to Pacquiao, we got you on Bleacher Report. I was working at Bleacher Report. Yes, with an interview with you. Kevin Rooney helped facilitate that. I would DM Kevin Rooney.
Kevin and I meeting was actually pretty interesting. That was a little different. He was actually working for Joe DiGuardia, so I would like come into the office. And I remember, like, you know, I have a fight on Friday or Saturday night, and I come into the office on Monday to like get my check or get my ticket money or whatever. And Rooney would just be like, easy fight again, huh? And I was like, yeah, no, the guy was tough. He's like, I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you don't have a mark on you. I was like, yeah, I didn't really get hit much. So every Monday I come in. Yeah, Rooney had like, I was at two or three of Rooney's fights.
Yeah. And then towards the end of your career, Chris desperately wanted to get into media. He was hounding me to be part of this podcast. I was like, this guy's fucking annoying.
Oh, God, stop calling.
I think I'm going to go with Chris Mannix as my co-host. I actually got them mixed up, Chris's. I was like, oh, wait, you're not Chris Mannix?
Oh, shit. You called me into your office. You're like, oh, no, you're a lot shorter in person. Oh,
like
wait.
I have an office.
Yeah.
Like exactly. I have an office.
So, no, boys, my name is Rav. I'm from Orange County, and I'm a big heavyweight boxing fan. So with this new generation of heavyweights, like guys like Tabayel, Wardley, I guess Hergovich, Bacoli, Itama, Jared Anderson, Ajogba, guys like that, who do you think has the highest ceiling at the world level? On top of that, I got a couple more questions. Who do you guys think has the most power that can also translate at a championship level? And finally, who do you think is the most exciting to watch out of these new crop of heavyweights? So, yeah, love the show. Keep it up. Chris, love you.
Sign off with the love you. All right.
Orange County. I love Orange County. I spent a bunch of time there during the pandemic. So, shout out to Orange County.
You can answer the question? You want me to? It was long.
Yeah, no, but it was long, but it was all in the same vein. So I got the same answer for all three questions.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah,
it's Ituma, but also Jelilov is my secondary choice, who I think has the highest ceiling.
Even though he's 30,
he's just so goddamn good, and it's heavyweight, so they have a longer duration of their career. But yeah, no, it's Ituma all the way in terms of potential, power, and most exciting.
I 100% agree. I would have, if I answered first, I would have said the same thing. I think it's because Ituma is that damn good. And I also think the others are so questionable. I think Ituma is as close as you can get to a blue chip prospect. He's up there with the Kamaru Usman's, Emiliano Vargas, the
Abdullah Masons.
He's that good. He's fighting pretty soon too. Last week I was in Orlando watching Denir Pero, who I believed was on in the same realm as some of these guys. But after his performance, I don't believe so anymore. Or he's had a setback, because I heard some rumblings. He doesn't watch tape. You know, he just recently started weight training. You know, I'm not going to throw around the L word, but, you know, rhymes with hazy. And he goes in there and he gets dropped hard by a guy with two losses who was not, you know, massive underdog. And we'll see. He's signed with Turkey. You know, they were talking about that all week out in Orlando. You know, Turkey doesn't just sign anyone. He signs people that he thinks have potential. So I think that Pero is I'm going to put him on ice for a little bit. And this Justice Hooney guy is fighting Fabio Wardley. Did you see that? Justice Hooney is replacing Jarrell Miller, which is kind of wild.
Wild.
Hooney's 30.
Yeah, so I guess he needs a move, but Wardley has a lot of momentum behind him. That's a serious step up.
I was not expecting that type of step up, so I love that fight. I'll be tuned in for that. I'm kind of now intrigued by the next wave of heavyweights. I spend so much time, I know you do, is maybe not you as much as me. I spend so much time dealing with the biggest stars, the biggest names, the biggest fights. And I guess my time with MVP has got me closer to prospects. I think you see a different level of prospects with ProBox. So you're a little more in tune in the prospect game.
And the top rank shows too. The undercard and top rank. I see a lot of those guys.
I feel like I'm very, very heavy invested in the biggest fights, right? Because that's what I cover the sport. We do this podcast for most of the time we talk about the biggest names. I'm very, really into this next wave of heavyweights. and seeing who's going to emerge next, especially with Turkey and his involvement with heavyweight boxing. I'm curious to see if Turkey and Saudi have the same interest in these guys as he did in Fury, Usyk, Wilder, Joshua. So will, you know, Atuma, will he be a big part of Riyadh season? Probably.
I think so. I think he's the most backing, and I think he's the guy that's probably got the highest ceiling and the trajectory. But with heavyweights, you're never guaranteed. There's no guarantee star in heavyweights because it's just the guys are getting so big now. They're so big. They're so athletic. And I always say, like, you can't have a chin in the heavyweight division because all it takes is one punch. I don't care who you are. Yeah. So it's a really difficult road to the top of the heavyweight division, which is why they make so much damn money. So it makes sense, but. Yeah, Joe Love, isn't huge. Ituma. No, he's not.
But he's Pereira's not huge. Hooney's not big. Caballero's not big. Jalov is freakishly big.
Huge.
You know, like maybe we're getting out of that era.
I mean, Caballero. I know he didn't look great his last fight, but he had a good little run. I mean, there's a lot of asterisks on those. But I think he's pretty talented and physical enough.
He's 32.
Yeah, he reminds me of like a Joe Parker with power.
Yeah, Joe Parker. Dubois is in this mix too.
No, I think Dubois is literally the next in line. I think he's going.
I mean,
to
he
take
literally
over
has the belts.
As soon as Usyk leaves, he's the guy.
All right, this is a sensitive topic here for this next one.
Hey guys, this is Max from Washington D.C. by way of Long Island, New York. I wanted to reach out regarding Teofimo Lopez. You know, I don't really understand why this guy gets a pass on all the racist stuff that he says. Listen, I guess the fight game and talking trash is good, but he is so cringeworthy and dropping the N-bomb with his dad and then pretending like he didn't. We all heard it. You know, the banana thing with Keyshawn Davis. Why is this accepted in boxing? You know, Chris Algieri is always saying how good of a guy Tio is. He's a good kid. He's not a good kid. You know, he's clearly racist. You know, it's one thing to, you know, try to build a fight, but A, you're not even fighting, you know, Terrence Crawford. You know, you're just being racist for attention. And, you know, I'm not trying to sound all, you know, woke and or whatever, but like, this stuff is not good for the sport. It needs to be condemned. And, you know, the Ryan Garcia racist stuff, with the KKK and digging up George Floyd so we can kill him again. Like, these guys should not be getting a pass for this, and the media, I think, needs to do something. So I want to get...
Yeah. I agree. I've talked about it on this show numerous times. I don't like Teofimo's latest slant. I don't like what he's doing. I think it's absolutely... It's just horrible. And you can call me woke. This isn't woke. This is a guy... It's not clever. It's just a guy dropping hard ends on Instagram with his dad and then going backwards and saying, I said liquor, guys. I said liquor. And then deleting the tweet. And I tweeted something about it because not many have spoken up about it. There's only a few that speak up about it. I tweeted over the weekend, like, I don't understand why Teofimo is doing this over and over. He's negating his performances inside of the ring. He came out on top at the Times Square event. Leave it at that, bro. Your career is here now. You're hot, riding high. We're already, you know, most forgot about some of the other stuff you said in the past. And then you go and drop a fresh new slur. Like, come on, man. Like, you make it really hard to defend you. And as for what Matt was saying with why is this allowed in boxing, Chris, you can attest to this too. It's because this sport, it's different than any other sport. No one cares. If this was, Teofimo's a top five-ish, top 10 name in the sport. If you have a top 10-ish, top 5-ish name in the NBA or the NFL dropping racist slurs on the regular, it would be top story everywhere. In boxing, it's swept under the rug. Who's going to discipline him? Top Rank? No. I heard a rumor that the WBO was going to have a talk with him or at least put out a statement, something.
Guys, no, they're not. And Matt, you do sound woke as fuck. So let me be honest. This is boxing, guys. You're not in gyms. You don't understand the ethnic aspect of this sport. Listen, what he's saying is terrible. I'm not defending Teofimo Lopez on all this bullshit. You mentioned the word cringe. Cringe is what sells. And unfortunately, Teofimo's taken that lane and he's missing by a mile. This whole race thing, dropping N bomb, all of that is so out of pocket and so it's missing the cue by so much. But At the end of the day, this is boxing. The racial aspect of this sport cannot be denied. For fans, I know we look on the outside and you're like, oh man, racism is crazy. Be in a gym. All right. This is what gyms are like. Gyms are not, it's not a safe space. Okay, there's no safe space in boxing gyms, guys. You go to a gym, you're a white boy, you're the white boy who's going to try to get their ass kicked. Yeah, everyone's going to try and whoop the white boy's ass. If you're the black dude in the white gym, whatever, this is the way it goes.
I get that.
I'm sorry to say this to you guys because no one ever sees this stuff. I grew up in this.
So, but shouldn't Teofimo know better? Like, that's a gym.
He's going for the cringe. I'm telling you right now. If you look at your Instagram, if you go through your Instagram, what you look at these things that have a billion clicks and likes. It's the cringiest shit possible.
I know.
And I say it all the time. Marvin Hagler will be rolling over in his grave when he sees top flight fighters, boxers, doing this stuff they do on Instagram for likes and clicks and whatever.
It's crazy.
Ramon Cardenas, we were in the fighter meeting for him when he fought Naoya Inoue, and he said, I don't care about Instagram. I don't care about getting clicks. I care about fighting and winning and being a world champion. He's like, I'm not like these other guys out there.
Well, he is tweeting
more. Fighters need to take that route. Stop trying to be insta-famous. Go be a good fighter. Go be a world champion. Go and beat people up. Leave the slurs and the racial stuff elsewhere. If you want to do that, whatever. I don't know why we're okay with having that out in the public. But it's not going to stop, guys. All the stuff that's been said, who was that? Haney and Bernard Hopkins, I'll never lose to a white boy. Like, come on,
it's
not
bad.
As bad, it's but not it's, over, as, it's overtly if, racist.
If you don't understand why that's not as bad as a Latino or a white guy dropping the N-bomb,
definitely right. Not as bad. You're just playing devil's advocate. It's still racial. Here's still racist, like, guys. There's racism, the racial aspects of boxing, ethnicity. Yeah. It's part of the sport.
It's crazy.
Italian guys, Irish guys. Yeah, you know, it's depending where you're sport. From. You go to a gym and. And you see, like, you know, there's different. I remember going to Johnny Toko's gym in Las Vegas, and there was different parts of the gym for different ethnicities.
Segregated?
Yes, 100% segregated in terms of the gym. And, you know, you went to the Mexican part in the back. You had the Caribbean portion. Like, you had the Mexican part. It was all separate.
That's because everyone fights differently. I remember my friend. Yes. I remember talking with my dad or someone, and I had a friend around that wasn't really into boxing. I was like, "Man, that guy fights like a Mexican," and he was like, "Did a double take." He's like,
"Yeah, like that."
Dang,
like,
that's say that. Talk. I was like, "No, that's a compliment."
Yes, we can. Yes,
that's
we can.
Like the highest order, like the highest honor you can have as a fighter. That guy fights like a Mexican. You know, black
Puerto Rican with a left hook, man. They all got it. It's like, wait, what?
So I understand that. That's fine. The sport is ethic. That's how they market it. That's how they. Yeah. Yeah, it's 100% the thing. Teofimo is going way too far.
He's missing the target.
And the thing with Teofimo that just doesn't he fancies himself as this like master marketer. Like, oh, I got Bud Light to come to Top Rank at Nesquik. I talked to the CEO of Disney last week. No, you didn't. But like, you can't say you're a master marketer and then in the next breath you're dropping slurs, you're dropping N-bombs, and you're torpedoing. You would think you're torpedoing your image, but like I said, it doesn't matter in boxing. Nothing happens. This comes and goes, and it's already over. It's already passed. It's already gone. It's not going to prevent him from getting fights. It's not going to prevent his wallet. It might stop him from getting maybe an endorsement, but fighters don't get endorsements anyway these days. So WBOs maybe will put out some, you know, lightly worded statement. Top Rank's not going to say anything. Nope. He'll probably do it again. He's not going to learn. All he has to do is come out and say, I'm sorry. Not double down. Well, he put out a tweet pretty much saying that he's the victim. He pulled the victim card. I don't know if he was talking to me directly. He said, don't ask for interviews if you think I'm racist. Because I did an interview with him a week ago in Times Square. Obviously, before he dropped this, these hard ends, bro. Hard.
That was a new one. That new one. That one.
New one. Oof. Just dropped. Him and his dad are hitting the speed bag. Where's Crawford? His dad says that beat.
Oh
that
no!
Beat.
No, I saw that. I thought that was old, but
no, bro. It was last week. Like, what are you doing?
And people are praising him because he was the better fighter on that card, and he looked really good. And it's like, and then ooh, it's three steps forward, two steps back with him. Three steps forward, two. This is nothing new. He's been doing this for years. He likes to torpedo his own career.
Self-sabotager.
But I mean, yeah, but the guy can fight. And at the end of the day, listen, we got guys who commit crimes. We got guys who commit vile, vile crimes. and they go on and it doesn't affect their career. This is,
it's annoying.
This is boxing, dude. It sucks, but it's still a fight sport.
It's the reason why the sport will remain kind of in the shadows and remain niche,
it's niche.
Because
it's a niche.
This doesn't even get picked up. Doesn't even get in the headline. And no penalties for it. You know, there's nothing stopping the next fighter from using it. Like, I would say promotions don't really lean into that. It was even worse in like the 80s and 90s. Like, they would just straight up use race to promote fights.
Oh, absolutely.
I always say that's the lowest form of promoting. Is you start off as a promoter, you sort of let's promote this. Exactly. Let's promote this fight.
Literally, the Great White Hope was the name of the whole promotion.
Yeah,
that's so gross and racial, and just it's causing divide and divisiveness. It's a really horrible thing to do, and you're right. It is the lowest form of promoting a fight. But
well, there's people out there that say Teofimo's going to get his, and you know he wants Boots Ennis, Black Fighter. He wants Terrence Crawford, Black Fighter. You know the beauty of boxing is you can say all these things, but you got to get in the ring, and Teofimo will get his. Teofimo will get his. So I don't know. I think it's bad. Obviously, it's bad. But will it stop? No. Am I surprised? No. So we just talked in circles for about 10 minutes just now. Whatever.
Sorry, this is Harry from New York here. First, my question is for Chris. Have you ever tried La Industry Pizza in Brooklyn? Best pizza in New York. Tried it for the first time last weekend. The hype is real. Second, I wanted to ask, is Canelo Crawford too big of a fight for Turkey to mess up and steal buzz from? Or do you think that he can meddle enough to take the buzz off this super fight? The news from today, what is this, Tuesday the 13th, only seems to increase confusion and decrease buzz. What do you guys think? Let me know.
I think the guy's great diction. He's a great pronunciation, that guy. La Industry Pizza? I've heard of it. Never been.
I mean, I don't live in New York anymore, guys, so I'm not really the guy to check in with.
You've never been there, though? It's pretty famous.
No. No. So that would have been a better question for you, Dan.
Dave Portnoy, obviously El Presidente, pizza man, he just gave out an over a nine rating, which he hasn't given out since 2023, for Ceres NYC, C-E-R-E-S, which just opened. And he gives out the 9.2. The place, it has lines down the block now. They're doing reservations just for pies. He caused an hysteria, Portnoy, by just giving this a 1.2. Sold out. Look, I just went to their Instagram. They're sold out of pizza.
What a world.
The power of that man.
I'm going to say off the bat right now, guys, I'm not a big pizza guy. So pizza is not fine dining in any way, shape, or form.
What are you trashing pizza for, man?
I'm not trashing. I'm just saying, like if you people ask me about
crisp black and blue steaks, too good for pizza.
I don't care about it. Pizza's like on the go lunch food. I don't care about pizza. I care about real food. I'm going to make real food. But
that's a hot take.
Sorry, guys. Hot take. Pizza. I'm not a big pizza guy.
Wow. I'm clipping this out, putting it on Instagram immediately.
Losing
Chris Algieri hates pizza. Other part of your question was, can Turkey?
Is it too big? Is it too big to get messed up? Yes.
I don't know.
Yes, it's too big. It's too big. It doesn't matter. I don't know. My 9-year-old nephew could promote this fight. It's going to sell.
Yeah. It's two of the biggest names. As much as people don't like it, it's what everyone's talking about. It's the biggest fight remaining on the schedule. You can change around the dates, and it's not the first time a promoter has changed stuff around. And it is causing a little bit of confusion right now, but when they announce it for sure, which is probably going to be no one's going to care. We're all going to watch. We're all going to make our opinions. We're all going to tune in one way or another.
The promotion, the lead up is going to be great. They're going to make all those Hollywood movie script movie scenes on the way up. It's going to sell. It's going to be huge. Absolutely huge.
Speaking of Canelo Crawford, we have a Canelo Crawford hater in the chat.
Hey, Dan, Chris, Perry here. I think I've spoken to you previously about my lack of interest in Canelo Crawford. That's only been further heightened after what I saw. Canelo looked disinterested. I do agree with Chris. He'll show up better and more charged up for Crawford. But I'm also not buying this narrative on the Crawford side, where people are trying to build this up as if he's been chasing Canelo for years and building up to this moment. I can show you multiple interviews 18 months ago after he beat Spence, where he made it clear he's not fighting Canelo. It's too much of a weight jump. And then 2 weeks after those interviews, he goes on Joe Rogan and says, I'll fight Canelo at 168. That tells me that he changed his mind based on the amount of trend it was getting and momentum it was getting on social media. Number two, he has willingly chosen to sit out an entire year instead of taking at least a tune-up fight at a catch weight of 160, 162, where conventional wisdom says a 38-year-old would benefit from being a little sharp going into this type of fight. So all in all, I don't think either one of these guys is super hungry. I do think they'll be as good a shape as they can be at this age, but it's going to be an anticlimactic fight, in my opinion. Mayweather-Pacquiao 2025. Oh, and by the way, Canelo, like Manny, is 35. Crawford, like Mayweather, is 38. Your thoughts?
My guy Perry comes prepared.
He nailed it. He nailed it, and I agree. I mean, I agree with all of it. I was never really interested in this fight. It only became even competitive to me after seeing Crawford Canelo that last fight. But even then, like, this fight doesn't really matter. I mean, if Crawford wins, historically, it matters. If Canelo wins, does not matter at all. You're supposed to beat this guy. He's three weight classes below you, and he's 38 years old. Yeah,
that's why Canelo never wanted it. I found a video on my phone from August 2023, and I had put a microphone in Canelo's face, and I was like, hey, man, Crawford, this Crawford fight is starting to build some momentum, and he shot it down so fast. He said, no, yeah. I'm not going to fight him because he's too small. And if I win, I won't get any credit. Obviously, things have changed. Money being the number one thing. There's now the money is there. And they're going to overpay both guys in order to get the fight. Yeah, I mean, it could be.
Did you see the interview with Crawford? And I forgot who he was with, but they asked him, like, hey, would you ever fight Jake Paul? And he's like, no, never. And like, what about $200 million? He's like, I would fight Jake Paul. it seemed
with,
like that kind
Shannon
of.
Shannon
Sharp, right. So it seems like that kind of situation with the Canelo where, you know, Perry was just saying, it's like, yeah, when you first ask Crawford, but nah, the weight's too much. I don't want to go up to 68. But then, you know, 2 weeks later, it's like, oh, wait, I can make that much money. Oh, okay, yeah. Yep.
So well, Perry's kind of contradicted himself there. He said he doesn't believe it's going to be a competitive fight, but he also doesn't think that Canelo is going to come in like he did against Skull. So if Canelo comes in highly motivated.
He's meaning he's coming better, yeah.
If Canelo comes in highly motivated, which he will, and Crawford's going to come in highly motivated, I think this is going to be a fun fight. Do I think it's going to be like a knock 'em, sock 'em, robots drag out fight? No. It's going to be a tactical fight where with two of the best, you know, technicians of this generation. If it's on Netflix, there are going to be some people that are going to be disappointed because this is a Pacquiao Mayweather all over again. Not as big. But you're going to have a ton of eyeballs. You're going to have parties. You're going to have people tuning in, casuals. And they're going to expect one thing from this fight, and they're not going to get it. What you're going to get is a very disputed decision. But I do think it's going to be a fun fight. I do think the level is going to be so high. I kind of disagree that it won't be. It's going to be some dull, dead fight. I think it's going to be a really, really exciting fight.
I don't know. I can't even picture this fight. I can't picture... Crawford fighting at 168. I can't picture the two of them in the ring together. It's a weird fight to kind of.
Well, that's why we watch. We watch weird fights. No, we watch it's small guy versus big guy. Can the small guy beat the big guy? Like it has all the elements of
I wonder if Crawford's going to come into this in like a Sugar Ray Robinson versus Joey Maxim thing, where he's just like, I'm just going to be the size that I am. I don't need to get to your size. And just do what I do, which I think would be smart. I don't think he needs to get up to 190 pounds and then trim back down to 68. I think be the smaller, faster
be
guy.
Fast.
He hits hard enough. He hits hard enough, or he has.
And he hits you with those shots that you can't see.
Bling, bling, bling. And yeah, punch you don't see is the shot that hurts you.
What if he stuns and staggers Canelo? I'm not going to say knock him down because we've never seen Canelo knock down. He staggers Canelo like unlike we've ever seen. Or going all the way back to that Cotto fight with the brother, Jose Cotto.
If he's going to win, he's going to have to.
That would be something. That would be worth the whole hoopla.
He's going to have to do it early, too. If he does that early, we got a goddamn fight in our hands.
That would be worth all the hoopla, right? If you see Canelo staggered.
Twice about what's coming his way. And that's one thing, dude. Speed's different. You know, power's power. You know, like he fought a guy like Kovalev. He took Kovalev's best punches. You know, big guy. But speed is different, man. And punching power is a weird thing. You can spar with 126-pounders that can knock out a middleweight. And it's not so much that, you know, they have power, sure, and they have power in their weight class, but then you put the speed behind it and you hit you with shots you don't see and you get stunned. The problem is that Canelo's got the best chin I think we have in boxing today. So if he can crack that chin, then whoo boy. But I think either way, it's an historic event, but mostly because it's kind of odd. But listen, we're going to be tuned in. We're going to be on the edge of our seat because it's that kind of matchup. Nothing you can say about that.
Hello, this is Yesenia calling from the Bay Area. And my question isn't really based off of any of the events coming up. Just a fun question, and wanted to see who, in your guys' opinion, was the better entertainer, Prince Nassim or Madomet Elbaiz? And I know this is a little bit more on the throwback side, but just wanted to get an opinion on who you guys thought was, like, the more entertainer fighter. Okay. Well, thank you, and have a nice day.
Who was it? It was Nassim and who?
Madomet Elbaiz. Do you know this guy? He's a Mexican fighter.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
This is from Sunflower on Instagram. She's one of our biggest listeners, hardcore boxing fan. I see her in our comment section fighting with these commenters nonstop. They try to say you don't know anything because you're a woman. She fights back. So shout out to Sunflower. She's been a supporter of the show for many years. And she sent me some videos of Madomet Elbaiz because I didn't know who that was. This guy is, if he was around today, he would be.
You didn't know who Jorge Páez is?
No.
What?
She told me that he was a clown, like a legitimate clown in the circus.
Prince. Yeah. Yes.
And then got into boxing. She sent me a bunch of his videos of him dancing and stuff. He'd be like perfect on the Misfits YouTuber world.
No, but he could really fight. He was world class.
Oh, he could?
Oh, no, no.
Well, you
no,
hear clown.
No.
I was like, I mean, who is this?
No.
Did he fight he like the Butterbean circuit?
No, he was world class. And
I stand corrected.
Yeah. Yeah, he fought Oscar De La Hoya. Like, no, he's super legit. Like,
he fought De La Hoya?
Yes, dude. How do you not know who Jorge Páez is?
I don't know. There's just a freaking dead spot dude, in my memory.
He went the distance he fought Pernell Whitaker. He fought Oscar De La Hoya. He actually fought Troy Doisy a couple times. Wow. Yeah, he was a 26-pounder. I think he was a 22 and then 26, but definitely 26.
So really good and could entertain.
No, world class. He had a son, Jorge Páez Jr. He was kind of a fringe contender, but no, Jorge was world class. And in terms of entertainer, showmanship, hands down.
Better than Prince, would be my pick.
Hands down. He wasn't as... The thing about Hamed was his knockout power. Like, right. He punched so damn hard, and he would knock guys out so bad, and world-class guys as well. And also his style was so awkward. But no, Páez, in terms of his antics... I think Hamed probably looked up to Páez in terms of where he got.
He probably
no,
he
Páez,
bit from him. He probably
yeah.
He inspired.
Wrote the book. He wrote the book on being a
how the
a
hell did I not know this guy?
I don't know how you don't know who Jorge Páez is.
Wow.
Shame on me. I watched him get starched by a lot of like our best guys, like you know when De La Hoya knocked him out, Genaro Hernandez. I remember
Genaro.
Those fights in the 90s. But yeah, no, he. I mean. Tremendous fighter. Like,
awesome. Great question from Sunflower.
Yeah, dude. Okay.
Hi, Dan and Chris. My name's Tracy. Since you seem more keen to share personal stories lately, I was just curious. What was the fight that made you both boxing fans? Like the one that made you feel as though you need to see more of this sport? Okay, that was all. Thank you.
Great question, Tracy. First off, we do have female listeners. I think we've established that.
Yeah.
That's number one. We have 98% male, but we do have a 2% female listening base.
and they all 2% call in.
Yeah. To answer Tracy's question, what fight got me into boxing? I was kind of born into this sport, so I really didn't have a choice. But I will say I have other brothers and siblings that don't really follow boxing, don't like it. So it got to a certain age where I could have just stopped watching the sport. And I could have just went to something else, but I stayed in. You know why? Because in 1997, I went to Kevin Kelly, Prince Nassim Hamed at the Garden as a 10-year-old, and I was transfixed. I was just the lights, everything about it. Hamed coming for the first time from the UK and all everything that he brought. His ring entrance, phenomenal. The Flushing Flash, what a name. Kevin Kelly fighting out of New York. Love that, that he's from New York. Then they go on and put on one of the best fights of the 90s. Everyone, they're down, they're up, they're getting knocked all over the place. And I was like, this is, I love this sport. I love it. I got to be part of it. In 20 years from now, I'm going to have a podcast. Everything. That was the fight that I wouldn't say made me a boxing fan, but it kept me a boxing fan.
Yeah, I too did not have a choice. I grew up in a boxing watching household because of my grandfather. My brother and I are both ridiculous boxing heads and have been since we were literally children. You know, I was I'm a fighter. Obviously, my nephew is now a fighter. So it's not like you, like where like we had people in the house that didn't become, you know, boxing fans. Like literally our entire house became boxing fans. So in terms of what was the fight, I don't know, because I used to watch everything in the 90s and it was just De La Hoya.
Tuesday night fight, De La Hoya, yeah.
It was De La Hoya. Like De La Hoya in those early to mid 90s, you know, coming out of the Olympics in 92 and then watching his entire career. And then I get, it was like De La Hoya. We watched all those. My grandfather loved him. He loved Tyson. We watched all the Tyson pay-per-views in my grandfather's house and all the De La Hoya pay-per-views. Arturo Gatti was on a lot of those undercards for De La Hoya.
Yeah, and then main events.
That pulled me off to Arturo. And then Arturo was my favorite fighter. And then I remember Floyd actually coming out of the Olympics. I forgot which video game. Knockout Kings? I think it was Knockout Kings where they had Arturo. They had Arturo, so I would pick Arturo, and I had him fight Floyd Mayweather, and Floyd Mayweather knocked me out every single time. Cool.
That also happened in real life.
And I was like, why can't I beat this guy? My brother was like, no, that kid's really good. He's an Olympian. Like, he's like, but he just started. How can he beat me every time? He's like, nah, he beats Arturo every time, Chris. And I was like, ah, man. So those 90s fighters, I think it was De La Hoya, Tyson, Gotti, and then my grandfather always talked to me about Alexis Arguello and Sugar Ray Leonard. So those are the fighters that, so it wasn't any particular fight that I went to or that I watched, but it was just the tales of fighters of yesteryear from my grandfather sitting on his knee, getting, you know, the bouncing on the grandfather's knee, telling you stories, getting pats on the head. That was my intro into boxing. That's why I never broke out.
Can't get any better than that. I mean, those are some heavy hitter names. I mean, those are the most exciting.
My grandfather was really good at picking out good guys.
I mean, De La Hoya carried the sport. Tyson, Gotti. I mean, those are awesome times for people are around our age whose mostly parents showed him it, or an older brother showed him, hey, you got to check this out. You got to check out this guy, Arturo Gatti. He is a beast. And man, I was at Gotti's last final fight. Got to hang out with him a little bit. Yeah, it sucked. But I got to hang out with him beforehand. He came out of a white limo. He was wearing an all-white jumpsuit. I was like, this is literally Jesus. And I gave him a hug. And that's one thing he always wanted. Talking to Lou DiBella and main events people, is he always wanted a limo, no matter what. It was part of his contract. He won the limo before and after the fight. And I remember he lost this. I forgot which fight he lost. And
that
he said
Gomez.
Yeah, to Pat Lynn. Not the last one. It was one before that. And he lost a tough fight. But it was one of them where he lost, and he went to Lou or Pat Lynch and main events. He's like, do I still have my limo? And they were like, yes, you can still have your limo after the fight. Like, go party. And
I counted up recently. I think was at five live Arturo Gatti fights.
Yeah, it was at a bunch
too. Between the Garden and AC. I've never been to more fights of any fighter.
I have a Gatti Duran July 2004 credential right here, a part of my collection.
Just Dan, I was Canobio. At that one, so we were there together. So hey, I was at Dan all three. Canobio, I was at HBO. All three awards. Doreen,
that was towards the end of his career, right?
Yeah. Well, no, that was at 140.
No, 2004 was a year after one of the Ward fights. And it was a year before the Mayweather destruction.
And I was at Joey Gamache. That was five. And I think I was at one more. So maybe I was at
I'll never forget not going to Gatti Ward. I went to a Sweet 16 instead.
Well, that was stupid, Dan. That was
I forgot
really
who I
stupid
told
move.
That recently. And they're like, don't tell that story. Like, why did you admit that? I was like, I don't know. It's just part of my story. I mean, we all have those events. We all have fumbles.
Don't
we all fumble.
Tell that story. That's awesome.
All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the weekend. Not the biggest weekend of fights, but we'll be back on Monday for more hijinks. Appreciate all the voicemails. Keep them coming. We love hearing from you. Have a great weekend. keep your hands up at all times, protect yourselves at all times, stay out of those DMs or out.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.